we taped the show.
Well, I don't know if I said it on today's podcast or on today's pop culturing podcast, but a sweatshirt only needs to get washed once out of every 52 uses.
Mm. Oh,
something like that.
I think that's wrong.
I'm pretty sure that's
okay,
the deal.
I think that's gross. Okay, so let's start.
I think that's gross. I think you're gross.
No, you don't.
Ooh. Happy New Year. My name's Todd Adams. I'm with Zen Parenting Radio. This is Zen Talk. I don't know what Zen Talk is it. Anybody know? 73? I don't know. Sorry. So we have a few questions, but I want to start by looking at Nikki and saying, Nikki, are you ready to jump in? I just unmuted you and I politely said she sent an email to us. And it's a good question and a challenging question. And I feel like it would be better if there was back and forth in regards to the question versus me and you sitting in a vacuum, trying our best to answer. So Nikki, are you still okay with jumping in?
Yep.
All right, yep. Let's so jump.
Will I read it?
Yeah.
Okay, so it looks like my brother and my sister-in-law have made the decision to cut themselves away from myself and my sister and my mum. They've recently talked to my mum and sent her an email and said that they're not comfortable with her will, which she wrote with my dad before he died 14 years ago, and which they discussed with us at that time. In that will, my brother received his inheritance from them. Because my brother was suffering from depression, my dad was dying, and they sold the family business where my brother worked in. So they wanted to give him and his family the best chance to move forward after that was happening. All this time later, they've brought up that now they don't think it's fair, and they're feeling that I'm loved, and that they want a third of whatever's left when my mum dies. My mum's feeling a bit upset about this because she's a healthy, vibrant 78-year-old with no plans on dying. And also just she believes in equality and she doesn't think it's fair. And so she's feeling pretty hurt but also pretty stubborn that she doesn't want to change her will. So that's where she's at. I love them to bits and it's really, really hurtful. And my brain is churning about what I can do to reconnect. So the things that are going through my head is sending them an email just saying, I love you, I'm there for you. And when you're ready to reconnect, whenever that would be, I'm here. Or giving them space and then them re-engage in their own time, or asking what I need to do. But of course I don't want to influence my mum's decision or my dad's decisions, to be fair. I had another option, which was trying to explain mum's point of view, but I'm not strong enough for that. It doesn't feel like my place. My mum and my sister and husband are just saying, look, it's time to back away. Over the Christmas break, I tried to organise Christmas with them. I've tried to organise activities with them. I've texted, I've called, and I haven't taken any of those calls. But my other concern is that my brother is depressed, and I feel like if we do let him disconnect, I'm scared something worse could happen because my understanding of depression is isolation. So it's not about being right. It's about my brother in my mind. But I don't know what to
do. Is that clear? Yeah.
Okay.
I have a question, Nikki. First of all, I'm so sorry because it just is, you know, obviously feels like, sounds like it's tearing the family apart, literally. My question is, I think I understand this correctly, but basically what happened was there's a certain amount of inheritance or money that your parents have or had or what, and they gave the portion to your brother already that because he needed it in present time, whenever that was, and said, we would rather have you have this now than wait for this when you may not need it as much. We want to give it to you because you're in crisis. And so just to make sure the logistical things that I understand them. So everything has been done evenly. I'm confused why they're asked. So are they saying we want more? Is that really what it comes down to? Okay.
Yeah. I mean, yes, they feel like the business, what they got 14 years ago was about the business. But it really wasn't. He was an employee of that business. He got 50% of their profit. So they were very, very generous to him in recognition that the selling of that business turns his life upside down, which is fine. But they were generous. They were very, very generous.
Yeah.
To the detriment of not themselves, possibly.
Yeah, they helped somebody else. Some really basic things that I can say, because obviously I don't think that anybody here's advice is going to change anything that's happening, but maybe just some framework things for you. Number one, that it sounds like to me, after asking that question, that everything is done evenly or, you know, with the best intention to be even. And so they are, what they're asking for doesn't, I mean, and again, it makes sense to them. I'm not putting them down, but it doesn't really make sense, which means
an objective point of view would be you got your share. Okay.
I have a girlfriend who had a similar situation who her father, before he passed away, she was struggling with some debt. And he said, I would rather give you this now, so you can get out of debt. And when he did pass away, he had put into his will that she had already been paid a certain amount of money. And she was pretty upset about it too, even though to me, that made complete sense. He said, this is the percentage everybody gets. I'm going to give you yours early. So I never really understood her frustration with it. But again, I guess sometimes our expectations are different. I think out of all the options that you laid out for yourself, their family can choose to disconnect, but you don't have to, meaning you can send a text, you can send letters, you can keep reaching out. I don't necessarily know or think that that may change their behavior, but at least you can feel like you're connecting. You know what I mean? Like people can do whatever they want, but they can't make you agree to it. The only thing that could be difficult is that they may not reciprocate. And you would have to be ready for that. I don't think you need to speak for your mom. I don't think you need to offer anything financially. I don't think you need to try and change your mom's mind. I don't think that has anything to do with you. I think I don't think it's your responsibility to keep your brother healthy. But connected to that is that you can continue to reach out and let them know you're always there. And that you don't even have to mention the money or the will, just that's not why you're in relationship with them or not in relationship with them. It's got nothing to do with money.
So, because I have the luxury of reading your email beforehand, Nikki. So to kind of do an overview. So the bullet point number one, you said option one, send them an email saying, I love them. I always be there when they want to reconnect. When I read that, I'm like, that sounds really good.
Yeah.
Option two, give them some space and hope they will reengage. That actually sounded pretty good too. I think that depends on what feels right to you.
Yeah.
The only one that didn't feel right to me out of the options you gave, Nikki, was number three, which is ask them what I need to get our relationship back. Like I feel
what
like
I need to do.
What I need to do to get our relationship back. And that, in my mind, I judge that sounds upside down. It sounds like this was not something that you need to do to get something back. It seems like something was taken away from you. You didn't take anything away from anybody else. So out of the three options you gave, I feel like you're trying to fix something
that
you didn't cause and you can't fix. And no, I love the fact that you wrote the options down. That kind of helps me know where your mind is at. And I feel like the first two were from above the line, and the last one was you're trying to like fix something that has something to do with your brother and a depression that he's struggling with, and your mom and your sister. It's just so many different variables. The only thing you have any influence over or control over is how you respond. So I would say anywhere between option one was saying an email saying, I love you. I would love to reconnect. And two, now the one question I had is, it sounds like you tried to reconnect with them over the holidays and that was ignored. So if you do number one, which is send them an email, what are the odds of them responding back? Because it seems like they've been ignoring you anyways. Is that right?
Yeah, I think that over the holidays, it was, hey, do you want to catch up? Let's go have a drink. Let's go fish. Let's go do things. And they just didn't reply to the text. By email, I'd get to say how much I love and respect them, how I think they've raised amazing children, and I believe in them.
Yeah, and I think part of this is that you have to grieve what has happened. And like you said, you know, in your email, you only have so much strength. And part of grief is getting your strength back. Grief is not going into a deep, dark hole. Grief is actually accepting what's occurring right now and allowing it to settle in a little bit. And grief doesn't mean it's like this forever. Grief just means you got your heart broken by your brother, and that you're, you know, having to deal with and having to feel this kind of cracking of your family right now. But the thing that I want to go back to is you don't have to, he may not respond to you, but you get to respond to him. You get to email him whenever you want to.
You get to show up in the way that you want to show up in.
Yeah. Sometimes we get really rigid about if they're not going to text me, I'm not going to text them, or they did this, so I have to stay away. You don't have to do any of that. Now, he may at some point say, please stop texting me. And then you have to decide. I don't know how it'll end up being, but you don't have to stop loving anybody. You know, we get in these situations where someone is acting in a way, and it could very well be caused by his depression and, you know, his own thinking, where we're like, oh no, now I have to be in this conflict with this person. You don't have to. He can be in conflict, but you don't have to. And also you get to grieve and be sad about what was and what you wish was, and that's actually going to give you more strength, because what drains us is fighting against what is, pretending that this shouldn't be happening, that I could change it, that I should have, that it's my job. That's what will drain your strength. Mm-hmm. Instead, you can accept and love. And I don't want to simplify too much, but it's a framework for you.
Well, and you said in your email that you're pretty raw, and I can tell just by looking at your face, you're still really raw. This is pretty new. And I feel like you're doing a good job of locating your sadness and even expressing it. I could tell just by looking at the screen. And, you know, I certainly don't want to like lean on you to try to find other emotions, but I would say just look through the whole spectrum of emotions. Are there parts of you that are angry towards your brother because he's disrupting it? And if that's true, can you find a way to maybe vent to a coach, a therapist, your husband, us, anybody? Because I just want to say that you have every right to be angry if that is truly what you feel. And I just wonder if you had any thoughts about that.
I don't want to talk about that.
Okay, yeah. That's fair enough.
Yeah, you don't have to, you know, that's what I love about the word grief, is that grief is loss, sadness, fear, anger, all kind of compiled in one. And sometimes it feels this way, that way. And, you know, Todd's trying to make sure that you acknowledge everything you feel, but you don't have to for us.
Yeah.
He just means that it's okay if you feel that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
I am talking to my husband and my brother and my sister.
Yeah.
Good.
But it's a lot.
It is. Yeah.
It's heavy, man.
It's heavy.
And you know what? Will's like things, family can go sideways so much with this crap. I struggled with this. My dad was mad at one of my family members, and he decided to do certain things in his will. and it was a potential disaster that was fixed, but this kind of garbage can just make things go sideways so quickly. So this is heavy stuff. So just know that you're supported by the team, and I'm just very glad that you shared with us, because I kind of feel like that's why we're here together.
And Nikki, have a mantra for yourself, you know, maybe write it down somewhere about what you know your intention to be, so you can go back to it, you know, because you're going to tomorrow be lost in thought about it, be lost in sadness, be living in, you know, feel connection to your brother and think I'll do anything to change it. You know, that's what happens, where our emotions are volatile. And write something down like, I intend to love everybody. I intend to only do my part, which keeps you out of your mom's business. And I intend to, to take care of myself in the process. I intend to grieve, whatever. Just write down your intentions so you can look at them when you get lost in thinking. Because sometimes our anxiety makes us think, I have to fix this now. I have to fix this now because I'm so uncomfortable. You have to get your foundation set, because this is not for you. Unfortunately, you can't fix it. Mm-hmm. Do you see what I mean?
And weirdly, like, the harder you try, the possibility that it might go even more sideways.
True. You could make it worse.
And that's tough, because I'm a fixer. My God, I love to come in and hero the situation and fix things. But a lot of times when I do that, it just works in the short term. And in the long run, it doesn't go well.
Yeah,
so
true.
Yeah. I've written lots of things that I can logically show why my parents have done what they've done. But it's like, it's none of my business, and it's not my discussion to have. They discussed it with my brother. They put it in writing. They attached it to the will. They spoke to the accountants. They spoke to the lawyers. They spoke to everyone. That all happened. That's right. Not mine to
And what you're doing, which is a tendency that I do, is I tend to take more than 100% of my responsibility in a situation. And I would just, you know, Kathy's talking about reframing certain things. Just know that this really is kind of like what Kathy said. This is between your brother and your mom, and you can support both of them. But you're kind of like, I know you're in this, and you might even be like kind of the role that you play in the family of just kind of keeping everybody together. I'm guessing that might be what's happening because of all the texts and emails around the holidays. But you don't ever want to take less than 100% responsibility for your situation, and you certainly don't want to take more than. And I feel like your third option was an obvious more than 100% of responsibility, because this has, weirdly, you're like a bystander to this. I know you are going to inherit money when your mom passes away, but even that was not your decision. Mm-hmm. It's just, you're the recipient of a gift. And it seems like it's really kind of equal, but I also know you're dealing with a brother who has been struggling, so.
And, you know, I'll say this to Nikki, but to everybody, because this is really just anybody's story we can relate to our own lives, even if the details aren't the same. And I'll use this quote, because I know Rob Bell said this. I know Millie loves this quote from him, but that everyone is evolving at different times, and that we can't bring people up to speed where we are. And I don't mean that we're faster or better or smarter. That's not what I'm saying. Because sometimes other people are faster, better, you know, like, we don't know everything. But sometimes when things look so obvious to us, like this one does for you, Nikki, like, this is so fair, and they knew. People can look at things through a different lens of, especially if it, you know, and again, we're not going to dive into this right now, but their childhood experience, I'm owed more. Nobody sees me. I didn't get what I deserve, you know, and we can't, if it be people we work with, if it be family members, even our own children, sometimes even our partner, we can't make them think like us. What we can do is give the best we can as far as like owning up to our own, taking responsibility, engaging in conversation. But, you know, sometimes we spend a lot of time in our minds thinking what we're going to say to people to convince them of certain things. And that's, you're just playing a game in your mind. I mean, if they are open and you're in a conversation and minds get shifted, that's amazing. That's icing. But just for all of us to remember, it can be really frustrating, but it's very rare. Like, I have a good friend that I was kind of struggling with for a while around some things. And just in the last year or two, I've had such peace with being with her and not being so annoyed all the time. I was annoyed because I'm like, she should think this way. She should do this. And now I'm just with her and I don't have any of those expectations. And our life is so much smoother because I was kind of bringing my righteous energy to how she should be. And that's not my job. And I love her completely. You know, we're all evolving at different times. So in different ways, in different directions, different trajectories. And how do we love each other through that rather than say we all need to be on the same page? Okay.
I'm trying to help Kelsey. Kelsey's emailed it. Apparently, I screwed up on the link. So trying to help.
So I was just going to, well, we're going to save the chat here, Nikki, because some people are sending some nice thoughts to you. So we'll save the chat and send it on its way because I think a lot of people, even if it's not the same logistics, again, have experience with family discourse that's challenging. As Todd said, we definitely do. And the practice is how we are going to view it, how we're going to look at it. So let's
okay, so I see that Kelsey's on. I was just trying to email you back, Kelsey. So sorry I screwed up on the hyperlinks. So if anybody has a question, put it in the chat box. In the meantime, we did get a few email questions. It's kind of a two-parter. My son, who's just turned 11, has expressed anxiety around climate change, mentioning local buildings in Dublin being submerged by 2050 if nothing is done. I very much limit his access to news headlines at home, but they do cover climate change at school. He is smart and a deep thinker, and I can totally see
why
what he is hearing is causing him anxiety. I have let him know that we should continue to do all we can at home. We've started composting. I've also tried to explain the idea, which you often mention, that bad news sells, that we don't hear as much as we should about all the efforts people are making. Do you have any other suggestions as to how I can help him? I have read and love John Duffy's new book, and I'm very conscious of how anxious our teens and preteens are due to the overload of information they are bombarded with and are not old enough to process. So if I could like summarize this, she has an 11-year-old son who is watching the news, or he is seeing the impact of climate change and he's anxious about it. And I can only raise my hand and say, so am I.
Yeah. I would give three suggestions there. The first one is to acknowledge what he is feeling and to listen to what he has to say. Maybe read the things that he's, you know, say, where'd you find that? I want to read it too. And just kind of join him in the learning because he's already being exposed to it at school. Like, it's not as if this is just on the nightly news. Like, these are things kids are learning about in school. It's all over social networking. And then I agree with you. Say things about, okay, what are we going to do? So what can we do today in this moment? The composting is good. We can, maybe give a little money. We can decide that in 2 weeks from now, we're going to go do some, you know, like, or even, you know, one thing that this doesn't happen anymore, but my youngest, when she was like 8 or 9, she used to like to go on walks and just pick up trash. Mm-hmm. And I know it's like, that doesn't sound like a big deal to, you know, maybe 40 somethings, but for a child to feel like I'm actually making an impact doing this because she is, mm-hmm. That can be helpful. So as we know, any kind of anxiety about something going wrong, we can, you know, feel more empowered by doing something to do something right. Mm-hmm. You know, like giving is how we decrease our anxiety. I also feel like what you told him about, you know, the news is always bad is 100% true. And I would recommend that you, two things that you should subscribe to: the good newspaper. We'll put all this information on the notes. And then the other one is Berkeley, University of California, Berkeley has a newsletter about all the positive psychology things that are happening, meaning research around people and how we view the world and all the changes that are occurring that we never hear about. And then you can just start with those two so I don't overwhelm you, but they refer to other organizations and other news sites that are giving good information. So you can kind of start to expand on that. You don't want to have like 10, you know, just have like two websites that you're kind of sending the information, because he's not wrong. But we can get too focused on one thing, like the buildings are going to collapse. Like when my daughter was really little, she was in a class where they talked about that the sun is going to explode in like a billion years. And she could not get over that. Like she was like, oh my God, the sun is going to explode. And she couldn't get her head around the fact that it was really far away. And it just felt scary. So, you know, trying to talk someone out of that is, you know, what I did with her was talk a lot about mindfulness, you know, like about the truth really is we only have here and now, that this is, you know, this moment is our joy, that it was not about, well, we can't do anything about it because that can make kids feel scared, but just like, aren't we lucky that we have this time? And, you know, you accept it. And at the same time, again, it's kind of like we were saying to Nikki about reframing, is that it's not that you're going to say they're wrong, but you're going to say there are things we can do.
Yeah. And along those lines, so two things. One is, I feel like we get anxious and scared and afraid when we feel like we are out of control or there's something out of beyond our control. And the whole idea of composting or picking up trash out front, like just the fact that you're doing something, I think does more than the small amount of just throwing some stuff in the trash. I feel like if you can expend energy, like basically using this anxiety to propel you into action, I think that's helpful. And then the other thing I would say, because it's funny, like I have these same conversations with people in my world. And the one thing I, you know, obviously all the scientists say that we're on a trajectory where things might go poorly. And obviously there's evidence just in the news as of late that says that. But the other thing is that people are resilient. People can change. People can make different decisions. Technology is something that we have no idea the impact of technology. And I mean that in a good way. Like, we don't know what's going to be available in 5 years, 10 years regarding what we can do to help the environment.
The earth. Mm-hmm.
And the earth itself is resilient. And, you know, it's just so easy for us to kind of come up with a doomsday psychology. And so those are the two things, but there's no like simple answer to this. I would just say, you know, like meet your son where he is, and where he is right now is like, you know, say, I get it. Don't try to talk him out of it. Say, I get it, but there are certain small things we can do. And there's some really smart, well-intentioned people that are trying their best to turn this thing around.
Well, and what I always say is instead of be teachery about it, say, you know, I agree with you. Those things worry me too. I think about them. What I do is you know, just share your perspective. I think sometimes when we're like, but here's the information and we're teachery, they're like, eh. But if you say something like, you know, I feel that way sometimes too. So that's why I'm so excited about composting. That's why I really want to be thoughtful about our water usage. Or that's why I really want to, you know, be on the city council so I can have more info. You know, whatever it may be is that you share.
So there's a part two to this question, which is kind of separate, but about the same son. And then we're going to go to Kelsey. I see she's working in the kitchen, but she has a question. So Kelsey, we'll go to you after. My same son also has become very body conscious. This is partly to his age, I know, but also his school class goes swimming from school for a term each school year, and his term is coming up shortly. While this has been fine for years, it seems that when kids hit 10, 11, or 12, they are not as keen to go anymore. My son says this is because there are kids in his class who make comments about anyone who doesn't look lean and fit. He is a healthy weight himself, but I would like to help him understand how to push back against this perfect body requirement, or at least have an understanding of the arguments. Are there any resources you would recommend?
First, my aunt's trying to get in and she can't.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, you know, I would say that we have to, it's very similar to the environment thing, is that we can't do the whole, you look great, you're fine, you're healthy, what are you talking about? You don't need to be perfect, because you're not then living in their world, which is, I've had two daughters go through swimming, and for both of them, it ended up fine eventually, but going into it, I mean, think about what you're being asked to do at probably your most, you know, that adolescent age where your body is just weird. Do you know what I mean? Your legs are long, your torso's big, or your, you know, some girls have gone through complete puberty. Some girls haven't even begun. Like, it's a really, and I know she's talking about her son, and for boys, it's the exact same thing. Some of them haven't grown yet, so they still are carrying, you know, weight that they did as kids. And I don't mean it's weight that they need to lose. It you know, kids lengthen out and they're supposed to look a certain way as kids, and then they look different as they become adults. It's not about, I'm not talking about, you know, what their number is on the scale. But we join them there and say, yeah, I get, you know, swimming kind of blows, you know, like that's a lot to ask, you know. How can I help you make that experience less challenging? Mm-hmm. Like for my girls, it was, can we get a swimsuit that they felt comfortable in, you know? And that wasn't the end of the conversation, but it was me supporting them rather than trying to say, I'm going to push against this perfect body image culture. That's a big undertaking. And in one conversation with your child, it's more about how can I support you? Of course you can share stories of people who are comfortable in their bodies and, you know, talk about Lizzo and talk about people who like
demonstrate. Who's Lizzo, sweetie?
Oh, everybody knows who Lizzo
no,
is.
No, not everybody knows.
Well, and you know, Lizzo isn't probably a good example because this is a boy. But other guys who have different body shapes and that we're not all supposed to look the same. All that is relevant. I'm not saying you don't ever say it, but I think trying to make that what keeps them from feeling that way, they're going to feel that way. So how can we give them some new wisdom and also meet them where they are and maybe support them in getting and having the best outcome?
Well, and I would say two things. One is it always comes back to modeling. So make sure that whatever you want your son to believe in as far as value goes, make sure you're modeling that same behavior. So means let's make sure that we're not body shaming ourselves or anything like that. And, there's that video that we've shown at the conference of just the, I know this is an 11-year-old boy, but just the ridiculous standards that we see on TV mm-hmm. and billboards. I'll include some videos of how they make these models up to look different than they are, like the before and afters.
Well, and let's also like break this down. What he's not saying, Mom, I wish I had a certain body. What he's saying is when people don't have certain bodies, other kids yeah. point out their flaws. You know, that's really what he's saying is he's not saying, I wish I looked like that kid.
Right.
He's saying, I'm very nervous going into this situation where I'm afraid someone's going to point me out.
Or point one of his friends out. Because he said that he's got a normal body, so he's less likely to be a victim of some.
Well, this is the mom saying this. He may not.
I know. Do you know I'm just going off what she's saying.
Right. Yeah, but did you ever worry about what your friends would be pointed out? Like
sure,
I didn't.
Of course.
Huh. I don't remember in middle school being
If you had a kid who's heavy set and he gets made fun of, that's anxiety provoking.
Yeah, that's true. That can be. I didn't think about that as being his dilemma. I just think that maybe going to the core of what if somebody points something out, if it be somebody else or on you, what can you do? Mm-hmm. And is that true? Again, it's that surface level of, you know, think about this as a hierarchy. I want to push back against the perfect body image of our culture. That's pretty high up there. That's, you know, it's an undertaking. Then there is, I want to help my son have a better understanding of his body image. That you can start talking about that. Then there is, what can I do to support my kid? In, you know, feeling okay when he's swimming. Does he have a swimsuit that fits? Does he have a towel that covers him? All that kind of stuff. And then there is even the deeper root of what you're worried about is someone is going to make fun of you. Mm-hmm. And if that happens, how can you respond? Do you, you know, let's talk it through. What's a plan? Can you in that moment laugh? Can you shrug? Can you, like sometimes kids just need a plan. And I'm not, and again, we may say as parents, no, you tell them that's not okay. I mean, come on. Do we do that? You know, when someone says something, maybe we do because we're grown-ups and we have a fully formed brain. And I hope that some of us do, but sometimes to push against our fellow classmates is a lot to ask, especially when we're in a swimsuit in the middle of a pool. Mm-hmm. So it's really, how do I manage that situation and grow from it?
Yeah. And I guess, you know, just to kind of finish up, you know, she asked for resources. I don't really have anything offhand other than what I've already mentioned. And I'll include in the show notes, but just keep the conversation going with your son. That would be a goal of mine. And then if your son happens to witness some mean behavior, you know, it's really easy to say, oh, stand up for that person, which is much harder than any of us want to believe, but they can always go to the person who may be ostracized for whatever reason and just make sure that they connect with those kids if and when they see that some whatever bullying or whatever word you want to use.
And, you know, I think there's plenty of, you don't need a certain book necessarily. There's plenty of things happening in the world where you can point to it. Like, it's funny, you wrote James Corden.
Yeah, I watched a YouTube clip of James Corden because Bill Maher said that we need to bring back fat shaming, and James Corden, who's not skinny, basically defended his position in a very loving and compassionate way. I'll put that in the show notes too.
But there's so much going on. Like, you know, I noticed, I brought up Lizzo. She left Twitter yesterday because she's tired of the trolls, you know? And it's like how, just so your son doesn't feel alone or that something is inherently wrong with him, that there are people for sport who point out other people's flaws. Why do people do that for sport? Because they don't feel good about themselves. This is, again, more information. It's not going to change everything, but you're trying, like, I kind of feel like there's all sorts of different parts that he needs to understand. It's, life is a big puzzle. They need to understand the bigger picture of our society. They need to understand their own emotions. They need to have access to tools. They need to know that they're not alone. I saw that Millie wrote something about belonging because of Brené Brown's work. And we'll add that podcast in, Millie, that you're talking about, like understanding that you're not alone and that you belong. You know, this is different than body image, but yesterday, you know, when my daughter was having a hard time getting up and going to school, which I think 99% of the population was because they're going back after 2 weeks, is me just continually saying to her, yes, and I know that everybody feels the same way you do, you know?
So we have two people left that want to ask questions or seek out support. We're going to start with Kelsey. So we got about 20 minutes left or so. So we'll see how long it goes, but it's just the idea that I want to go to Kelsey and then Jacqueline if possible. So let's start with Kelsey. Kelsey, raise your hand first.
Hi. Sorry, I jumped in a little late and I figured it out. So thank you. So my son is 5 and I'm going to do my best to kind of explain this, but when he gets angry or upset, which is, you know, often if we set a boundary or we, you know, we say no, or he can't have what he wants, it seems like what I'm seeing from the outside is it looks like he has so much sensation that happens so fast in his body, right? And he does an energy with this anger and disappointment and upset, and he doesn't really know what to do with it. And it has been years now that we are working on things like, I'm not going to let you hit me, which was a lot easier when he was 2, but now that he's 5, it's different. And he's not beating us up, but it's kind of that swing of like, I just need to get this out of my body or he'll knock the chairs over. Sometimes now he started recently like yelling a little bit or he'll throw some toys in his room. So part of my question, I guess, is what to do. Like, I can tell you a little bit more about the things that I do, so I guess new ideas and then also reassurance that I'm kind of on the right track and this isn't so, it seems fairly developmentally appropriate, but we've also gotten a little bit of feedback from his pre-K teacher that he has a hard time like processing big emotions, and he's really one of those kids who can't talk about it in the moment. Mm-hmm. He needs to figure out how to calm down and then talk about it later. And even sometimes when I bring it up, like very casually, when nothing has happened recently in that day, or I bring that up, you know, just over dinner or something, talking him about when we have big feelings, and he will listen to me for a little bit and then he'll just say, I don't want to talk about it. He really just doesn't want to. I don't know. It's that we've worked on like doing a list of all kinds of things that you can do instead of hitting. Part of it is like, we live in a really open house. So it's just like how to get my body away from his body, mm-hmm. you know, or how to have him be like in a safe space where he can, does that make sense? Like,
absolutely.
Because he'll just kind of follow me, right? Or something like that. And so I don't like the idea of when you feel anger, you have to go to your room. I don't like that message. So but sometimes that is the safest place to be. So we kind of do this like, let's take a break. I can be with you, or like available outside the door. I mean, I don't know. We just try to get creative, but I guess partially I just want reassurance that it will change, but it's also like, I'm a little scared. Like as he gets older, he's just going to get bigger and his feelings might get bigger. And how much of this is his brain? And does that make sense?
Totally making sense. And first thing I would say is just stay here. He's 5. Don't worry about when he's 7 or 8 or 9. It sounds like you have a lot of good ideas regarding giving him alternate plans. Aside from hitting, he can whatever, do push-ups, or there's a pillow he can punch. Have you given these ideas to him, and does he do it, or does he still just hit even though he's been given different options?
Yeah, the follow through is not great, but I'd say it's not great on both sides, all of our parts. Like, I'm not even sure where the list is that we made. Mm-hmm. And like, we haven't reinforced it maybe enough, and he is too little to remember those things.
So a few things, like, to answer your question again, you know, nobody knows anything for sure, but the thing that will also change as he gets older is his brain develops more, as you know. So a lot of his inability to monitor, and I like the way you describe it, you see all the emotions come up and his body almost gets inflamed. Like, I don't know where to put this. Yeah. And a lot of that is about brain development. And when there is more of a maturity, even at 7, 8, 9, things they can, it's not that anger goes away. It's that it gets, you know, it shows up differently. What I will say is, when you are talking to him, and by the way, everything you're doing sounds great. Mm-hmm. You know, like, you've got all these things in line, and you're talking with the pre-K teacher, and you know, they're used to boys and girls at 5 who get angry. So don't feel like this is just your kid. This is like a very common age where kids start to let you know that they're there, you know, and that they have feelings about things. But I would say, when you talk to him about feelings, if there's any way that you can, in the way that you talk about it, make it not about him. Meaning that I think a lot of times as parents, when we're bringing up things to our kids, doesn't matter what the age is, it's like, oh, I'm thinking of new ways to, and you didn't say this, Kelsey, but I'm thinking of new ways to help you. Or what if you did this? Or what if you, and so they feel like they're being targeted as something's wrong with them. Instead of talking about emotions in the big picture of like, you know, did you see on, you know, I don't know what shows he watches or games he plays, but did you notice how Daniel Tiger gets angry and he did such a good job, you know, working through that, or a character who doesn't, and making it about anger as an issue rather than them getting angry. And again, they're only 5, so they're not necessarily making the direct, you know, like a 12-year-old would go, Mom, I know what you're doing here. But a 5-year-old is still kind of like, they can be removed from it enough and learn something from it. And then it just gives you the ability to talk about emotions, maybe a little more openly, without him saying, I don't want to talk about it. Because part of the reason kids don't want to talk about it is they know it's about them. Mm-hmm. You know, they feel like there's something inherently wrong with them.
Yeah.
And then also talking about your own, not, you don't have to make things up or lie, but just like, you know, you can say things like, you know, when you were angry today, wow, I felt that way before too. And then tell a story, not here's what I did and here's how we resolve it. Because then you're trying to fix it. You're just trying to
connect
and join. And all these things I'm saying, you can do all of them at different times, and you may forget to do them for a few weeks. But I guess the big picture I'm trying to give you is just keep, you're doing great. And just keep talking about feelings in the broadest sense. I think sometimes with our kids, we're like, my kid is struggling. How do I help my kid? How do I focus on my kid? How do I help him talk about anger? Kind of ease off of him and talk about feelings in the world.
Well, in addition to that, like, he is, you know, the school said that he's not good at processing emotions. I'd say he's actually very good at,
he's having them.
He's not channeling them in a certain way. But like, as a guy, I know that I was taught, and probably you girls, just to internalize everything. Like, this actually is not that bad of a thing. He just needs a redirect, and he's 5, so it's going to be hard. But this is actually a good thing. He's letting this crap out. As somebody who's a 47-year-old man, I'm still trying to get these suppressed emotions out from when I was a young person. So I just want you to reframe it a little bit for you. Like, yes, this stinks.
Yeah. But, and hitting sucks.
Hitting sucks. So keep yourself safe. What I mean by that is when he's trying to hit you, you need to keep yourself safe. But at the same time, if you can somehow stay safe while stay connected with him.
Yeah.
So instead of like shoving him to his room saying,
but see, go. I was going to say, I know you were just about to say instead of shoving him to his room, but sometimes kids need to be alone.
Yeah. He tends to do well.
That's fine. I'm just saying, would you like me to be in here with you or would you like to be by yourself? Yeah. Give him that option.
That's good. That's good. Because I knew where Todd was going because I was going to say the same thing to you is I think sometimes we get these messages from books or maybe from Todd and I that we, you know, sometimes Todd and I speak in generalities and then people take it as absolute truth, which is never, if your kid's mad, never leave them alone or they'll think you don't like them or something. It's like sometimes kids need to be alone in their room. Don't you? Like sometimes when I'm mad at Todd, I don't want Todd trying to connect with me. I'm like, I need some space from you and then I can get my shit together and then we can reconnect. It's not about chronic connection. It's about reconnection. You know, it's about the problem comes in. If your son got mad, he went to his room, then he came out and you were being passive aggressive with him.
Oh, yeah.
Do you
yeah.
see? That's what kids will go, oh, I'm being shunned and my mom doesn't like me when I'm mad. If he goes to his room and gets mad and he comes out and you say, how you doing? You feeling a little better? Do you want to color now? That's great.
So, So I guess just to kind of like, I'm going to read what Millie and what Carrie said just for the people who are listening to this podcast afterwards. But just to kind of finish my thoughts up, it's just in a five-year-old way, if you can just say, this isn't that bad of a thing. We just need you to do, so, you know, these emotions are okay. This is a good thing. It's just we need to figure out how best to express them instead of saying, you know, and I know you wouldn't do this, Kelsey, but you're a bad boy or you're bad. Like, this is actually good. Like, I need to learn from this kid because he's better at it than I am. He just needs to be able to do it a little differently. And then Millie said, Kelsey, I feel your struggle. Just want you to know that you're certainly not alone. One of our seven-year-olds has the same issue and we're still trying to figure it out. And Carrie says, my son had a phase like this. I think he was older, but I honestly don't remember. He's 18 now. But I tell you that just to say that it did pass, but during it was hard. I also worried this would be him forever. We did what you said, giving him suggestions or other ways to express his frustration. It worked, but was still always hard, but then stopped altogether. And he's a great kid now. Jack did need to be alone. And he was raging when he was raging. I would ask if he wanted me to be there.
Mm-hmm.
So two really good posts. So, because I want to get to get to Jacqueline, we're going to move over to Kelsey and I would move over to Jacqueline. Jacqueline, what do you got?
Oh, hi. I wasn't even sure I would bring it up because I don't really know what I'm looking for so much. I guess just sharing, but it's more my issue. So, well, mine and Matt's, I think we both as parents, like all parents, struggle with accepting our child's behaviors that are completely developmentally normal and appropriate. And we're human and have trouble with that sometimes. So Oscar's 2, just to refresh your Oscar's 2 and Madeline's 4. Jude is 6, going on 7. She was just with us for the holidays. It was really nice having her here, but she's back with her mom now on the other side of Canada. So it's just the four of us. And we have, I guess the bottom line for me is I'm a bit worried that I'm causing anxiety in my kids because I'm a little bit rigid and I'm a type 1 personality. So I like structure and control. And so I guess, you know, I understand the importance of self-compassion and that, you know, that's a big part of, you know, being as good as we can be. But I just feel like every day I'm like going to bed feeling like I wish I would have done better today or, you know, I want to do better tomorrow. And I have awareness of all the tools and, you know, listen to the podcasts and read the books. And I think what the next thing I want to do is like really try to get better at meditation. I'm reading this new book, Unplug. Have you heard of it? It's this like the Busy Skeptic's Guide to Meditation. And the whole thing so far is selling you on meditation. I don't need to be sold on meditation. I totally believe it. Now I need to practice it. Practice the things that I'm reading and the things that I'm hearing and the things that I'm, you know, learning. I need to practice more. But like, so Matt and I, like, you know, Oscar now has entered a new stage. He's 2.5. So I guess there's a real transition that happens right through 2.5 and 3 and becoming more independent. And so like, you know, Matt will say on occasion, or, you know, often sometimes, this shouldn't be this, everything shouldn't be a struggle. You know, that feeling that you get as a parent when like everything's a struggle, it shouldn't be. And then I come in, of course, with the, well, this is our issue. Like, he's just doing normal 2-year-old things, and it's not about fixing what he's doing. It's about us, you know, trying to be better at all the things that we're learning. And so we have that back and forth sometimes. I'm a little all over the place, so that's okay. So yeah, I mean, I don't even really know what I'm looking for, but I feel like there's this whole early childhood 0 to 6 thing, and like, I have a limited amount of time that I have to lay the groundwork and do the right things. And then I, for some reason, I think I have this like vision that if you do everything right, or not everything, but do the best you can from 0 to 6, then it'll be like smooth sailing. And then I listen to these calls, and I know that's not the case. I see parents with older kids, and I know that no matter how well you do or think you're doing, you're going to come into struggles no matter what. But when going back to what I initially said about anxiety, it's just like both my kids now at 2 years old and 4 years old have picked up nail biting, like chronic nail biting. Mm-hmm. I dealt with this my whole life. So part of me is like, is it genetic? Did they pick it up from me, or am I causing anxiety in them, making them want to bite their nails constantly? And Oscar has really picked up in his language lately, and he started stuttering. So like, he's trying to say something to us, and a lot of the time now it's like, ooh, and he can't get it out. And then I do the research, and it's like, well, apparently this is like somewhat normal, I guess, or I don't know, a certain percentage, because I'm all over the place. You can see that's not the right time at the call to bring up all this blah, blah. But so like, anyway, yeah.
I was gonna say, I got a bunch of stuff for you. You ready?
Yes. Okay.
First of all, the stuttering thing is entirely normal, and they will work through it, and then it'll happen again when they're 5, and it may happen again when they're 7. I had 2 kids who stuttered, and it's not a problem for typically that you need any kind of intervention or speech therapist. It's just their brain is catching up with their voice. So you don't need to be like, slow down, or are you okay, or what's wrong? Just let it go. I have a niece who is 7 who... her brain is so creative, and it just takes her forever to get a sentence out. It's okay. It's not something, it's kind of almost like, you know, like kids who have tics, you know, who like have things that they do in their body. That's okay too. These are not problems. I mean, if they tell you they need help with it, but your 2-year-old is doing just fine. Mm-hmm. It's with that. Like, don't worry about that. And the other thing is the 0 to 6. I'll just talk about being 3, because I've been writing about this for the last 2 weeks. And this will help Matt too, tell him this so he gets a really good framework around this age. What happens around 2 or 3 is they go through something called separation individuation, where they have to realize they are not attached to you and that they are their own being. That process is essential. If a kid doesn't go through that separation where they say, I do it myself, I do it, no, I get that cup, I get this. If they don't tell you, I am different than you, they miss a really important opportunity to literally separate. They do this again at 13 or at 12 or at 14, where they say things like, you know, you say, oh, I like color red. And they'll be like, well, I like green. They're not trying to be disrespectful. They are trying to say, I am not you. And they need to individuate before they go out into their next phase of development. Because if your son, if everything was easy with your 2-year-old, that's more concerning, because then what they're doing is not separating from you, and they're going to still be like, you know, that's where a lot of separation anxiety comes in. And again, I had kids with separation anxiety that can be resolved too. Sometimes they go through separation individuation at a different time. If you want to read something, you can look at Margaret Mahler's work, Mahler. You can read Carl Jung's work about separation individuation. This is all research. Eric Erickson talks about it, Piaget. Like, this is exactly what he should be doing. So when Matt says it shouldn't be this hard, he's not right. Okay. It is hard emotionally, because your child is, you give them a cup of water and they say, no, I want that cup, or I'm not going to wear these socks, or I'm not going to wear those shoes, or I'm not going to watch that TV show. It's excruciating, but it's also exactly what they're supposed to be doing.
Are you guys both in the military?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I feel like you guys are on a roller coaster because you have a 2-year-old, a 4-year-old, and a 6-year-old, and you want to be on the merry-go-round. Merry-go-round does not exist for a while, if at all.
I don't think it ever does.
Parenting is not a merry-go-round. So first I want to normalize everything you're saying. Yeah. Like, no shit, you get frustrated at your kids for not listening to you. I could have said the same thing to you 10 years ago about a 4-year-old daughter, and I could say the same thing to you about my existing 15-year-old daughter.
I was going to say, Todd says things, and again, I do too. It's not just Todd, but he says things like, oh, you know, it shouldn't be this way, or why is this happening? And it's like, because it is.
I'm biting my nails, and I'm 47, and I still somehow manage to do a good job with, you know, the world.
My daughter, JC, does too. She showed me her nail yesterday. It was like down to here. And you know what I say to her? Is I look at her fingers and I say, oh, you know, I love these fingers. You know, do you? And basically, when she was little and she would do it, I would say, you know, ask her if there's other things that she could do, or like if, you know, she could pull things apart instead. But, you know, we're so human.
You talk about meditation. There's no side effects. So the only risk or cost of it is the time that you do it. But I can tell you, as somebody who has a decent meditation practice, not as good as some people I know, but it's decent, it's really hard to think of like, okay, I'm not going to get triggered by my kids. That's not going to happen. You're still going to get triggered by your kids. But I would say that start with the small stuff. Like, do you get mad at the guy who cuts you off on the road? Because that's easier to kind of practice than it is when your 2-year-old is doing something that you don't want him to do. Or like when the weather sucks, can you like say, oh, why am I mad right now? Because there's really nothing wrong with rain, but I want it to be sunny. So like, start with the easy stuff. And then lastly, and I know this is kind of an annoying thing, but I think it's so important. This is what I ask myself all the time is, what are these kids here to teach you? From my perspective, my judgment, the story I'm making up about you and Matt is that these kids are here to teach you how to chill out. And I hopefully that comes across okay and you don't feel like I'm kind of attacking you, but just don't sweat the small stuff because it's all small stuff. I didn't read that book. Who wrote that book? You know who wrote that
Richard
book?
Richard Carlson.
Randy Posh wrote the book, The Last Lecture. Like, all the stuff that you're worrying about right now isn't really worthy of the worry that you're giving it.
Okay, I'm gonna say one thing and then Carrie's gonna tell you something. There's this, I'm just throwing a bunch of research at you, but just so you feel like how normalized this is, D.W. Winnicott coined something called the good enough mother. And the good enough mother was not and right now we say the good enough parent because dads are just as involved, or at least many are. And that doesn't mean like you're doing the best you can, you're failing here, but you know, you're tired, so you're good enough. Why he coined that term was, it's better to be a good enough mother than to be doing everything perfectly, because our kids need to have a certain degree of conflict and challenge and things that don't go their way and needs that don't get met, so they know how to be resilient to the world. So when you go to bed and you say, I should have done this differently, blah, 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 that can remind you to put practice into place, that to, instead of reading a book, actually do something different in the moment. It can inspire you to do that. But you can also say to yourself, you know, I'm good enough. Like, I didn't do it all perfectly, but I did show up. I did feed them. I did do the, you know, I gave them the hugs and the love. Like, you're not supposed to do it perfectly, and you not doing it perfectly is actually helpful to their well-being.
Okay? All right. We're going to Carrie. hold on. Give it a second to unmute.
Okay.
Here we go. Hi, Carrie.
Can you guys hear me okay?
Yep.
I have a Bluetooth winter hat. Best invention ever. Anyway, I just wanted to say, I swear to God, this call is like all the things that I had to ask Kathy about when my kids were young, and now they're not young anymore. And anyway, I just wanted to tell you that your kids are going to be totally fine. So the whole thing with the raging, my son totally went through a phase like that. He's 18 now. He just came downstairs, and I said, do you remember when you did that? And he's like, I absolutely do not remember that, which is just so funny because it was a very short period of time, but it was like all encompassing. Anyway, what did I want to say? I just wanted to say that my son also bit his nails, and I totally felt like it was my fault because I am also I'm an Enneagram 1, and I am like hardcore 1. So I feel like I am very I just love process and I like things to be a certain way and I want things to be perfect. And I know I don't want things to be perfect, but you know what I mean? Anyway, my point is he is so great now and he actually came to his own conclusion about nail biting, maybe in high school, maybe it was before high school. Anyway, where he was like, I'm not going to do it anymore because I just think it's gross. And I was like, oh my God. Anyway, he does not bite his nails anymore. My husband does bite his nails, or did. He also doesn't do it anymore. But I wanted to say something else though. Wait, what else was I going to say to you?
While you're thinking, Carrie, I'm going to read Millie's and I'm going to give you a second to collect your thoughts. Millie says, I want to send Jacqueline a huge hug, first of all. And I can feel your struggle also. I am also type A, control freak, and probably characterized as a strict mom. I started this journey of self-discovery years ago, probably 10 years ago, though more seriously after discovering CPR 7 years ago. And I'm only in the last year or so of actually really practicing the things I've learned over the years. This is all to say that you're exactly where you're supposed to be. You are evolving and becoming, oh yes, and our daughter, almost 13, bites her nails. Small steps, just keep practicing. Thank you, Millie. Carrie, anything else?
I was just going to say that, try to just like give yourself some grace because even like I have a 16 and 18 year old and we have new problems now, but I mean, the kids are still great. But I also feel like I still beat myself up just like I did when they were little and it's hard because it's just who I am. And I also feel like it's different when you get older too, when the kids get older, because then you're like, I'm too late now. You know what I mean? Those are my thoughts now, which are not true. And I feel like you just gotta like, just keep reminding yourself that you are doing the best you can. And that quote that Kathy was talking, I mean, there is a quote that goes around what Kathy was saying about not being a perfect mother, but being a good mother.
Enough.
Yeah. Oh my God. That has been my mantra. I have that all over the place because that really does like totally speak exactly to who I am. So anyway, I just want to say I'm totally, Kelsey, you too. Like, I totally feel you.
Awesome.
But there's a light at the end of the tunnel.
Thanks, Carrie.
Thank you, Carrie. That was great.
Jacqueline, I'm going to unmute you and just see if you had any parting thoughts. Hold on a second. Give it a second. There you go.
Yeah. Well, thank you, everybody. I know that this is like, that's the thing. The intellectual part of me knows that this is completely normal and it's just about working through it and really just practicing what I'm learning. I get that. And Kathy, when you said about the good enough mother, it reminded me, I did a mothering when I had Madeline a few years ago, I did a mothering group and she taught us this thing where you put your hand on your chest and you say, I've done my best, let go of the rest. That's and right. That is all, again, it's all up here. I just need to put it into practice and just love them. Just love them and love who they are and love who they're becoming. And I know that's what I need to do. And thank you for the reminder and thank you for the support.
All right. Well, thank you, Jacqueline. All right, guys. So went a little over time, but we also started a little late. Sorry about that. I'll send an email out with this podcast and when the next podcast will be. Conference in less than 2 months. We did a pop culturing last night. If any of you guys watched the Golden Globes, you might enjoy watching.
Listening to our pop culturing.
Listening to pop culturing. So there's EPR from today and pop culturing from last night. Jacqueline, I know you and Matt are coming to the conference. Is that right? Is Matt signed up for the pre-conference workshop? Okay. Yeah, just make sure he does that because I don't want him to come to Chicago and me not spend that extra time with him. Because I think we can help each other. And anything other announcements?
No, thanks, you guys. Thanks for all the great questions. And what you write is so beautiful. And you're so supportive. And you always make me feel better. Like, I know sometimes I'm the one sharing things, but it's not because I'm doing it all correctly or that I'm not going to bed saying to myself, oh, I wish I would have done that differently. Like, this is just us as humans. And we're using this model that we learned in work and in school, which is I need to work harder, do better. I should be better. I should be comparing myself. We learned this model. It just doesn't apply to child rearing. So we're having to learn a more emotional, heart-centered, present, mindful model when we're parenting. And it's a practice because we've been so indoctrinated with the other model. So go gentle on yourself and we're there with you.
And special love to Nikki. Nikki's in a raw place right now.
We're sending you good thoughts, Nikki.
Love you, Nikki. And hang in there and keep us updated as it seems appropriate. See you guys later. Adios. Keep on trucking.
I was cold and then I was hot.